All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week beginning Chumash Shmos. And of course, again, as Mefarshim point out, one of the most dramatic aspects of Shmos is that it's a transition from the story of the individual to the story of the collective. All of Chumash Bereishis is spent by speaking the Avos and the Imos. All of Chumash Bereishis is speaking about the stories of the individuals. And now the truth is, although the individuals are still important, but the entire shift of Sefer Shmos, and the truth is for the duration of the Torah, really begins to shift and to focus on the story and the dynamic of the collective. So, of course, again, quick synopsis. We have Moshe Rabbeinu, well, before Moshe Rabbeinu, we have Paro beginning to enslave the Jewish people. We have Moshe Rabbeinu forcibly conscripted into the service of God. I say forcibly conscripted, because the truth is, it really begins as a conversation between Moshe and God. God asking Moshe, would you like to serve in this capacity? Moshe Rabbeinu saying,
no.
God saying, really, I'd like you to think about this opportunity. Moshe Rabbeinu says,
no.
And this goes on for until the Ribono Shel Olam finally gets really fed up with Moshe Rabbeinu and says, the truth is, I'm not really asking you. I'm really actually telling you what it is that I need you to do. I'm telling you what your destiny is. And the truth is, when it comes to your destiny, you don't have all that much of a choice. Moshe Rabbeinu, therefore, is forced, essentially, to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu makes his way down to Egypt, meets up with Aaron, delivers the first message of redemption to Paro, which, of course, does not go very well. Moshe Rabbeinu expects Paro to really go ahead and be receptive to this divine message of Jewish freedom, emancipation. And what does Paro say? Two words, Tichbat Ha'avoda. You have time to think about redemption. You have time to think about freedom. You have time to think about autonomous lives. That means you don't have enough work to do. Paro takes away their daily allotment of straw and forces them to make bricks from scratch. Nestled in the middle of this dynamic and exciting parsha is a very strange episode. Take a look at number one. Vayhi baderech b'malot. So remember, again, I left out one important piece. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu runs away from Egypt as he grows up, settles in the land of Midian, and there we know, biblically speaking, the best place to meet your Vasheret is the well, right? Always go to the well. Good things happen at wells. So Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately meets his future wife, Tzipora, at the well, and he settles down in Midian. Obviously, God then tells him he has to return to Egypt. So right after Moshe Rabbeinu leaves Midian to go ahead and go to Egypt, the following episode happens. Vayiba derech b'malon. He was on the way, Moshe, meaning this is the way from Midian to Mitzrayim, b'malon, and he's buying in. Vayifkeshehu Hashem, vayivakesh hamiso. Literally, the Kadosh Baruch Hu met him and wanted to kill him. Him, we're assuming, is Moshe Rabbeinu. Vatikach Tzipora Tzor. Tzipora takes a sharpened stone. Vatichros es arlas binah. She circumcised her son. Vatagal l'raglot. She threw the foreskin down at his feet. Vatomer, and she said, Ki chason damim atali. You are a bridegroom of blood for me. Vayeref bimenu. Literally, he released him. Az amra chason damim lamulos. And then she said, a bridegroom of blood concerning the circumcision. So the obvious question is, what is going on over here? What is going on over here? What's happening? Remember, again, everything was so choreographed, so perfect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go to Midian, go to Mitzrayim. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu, we've spoken about this in the past, Moshe Rabbeinu's entire leadership was choreographed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him what to do, when to do it, what to say, how to say. And in fact, you'll know that the times that Moshe Rabbeinu gets into trouble are when? When? When he goes off script. When he goes off script, when he does not, Kadosh Baruch Hu plans out everything for him. See, here again, Moshe Rabbeinu is following orders. Moshe is doing exactly what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. After much protest and after much, Moshe Rabbeinu accepts this new response. And suddenly we have this strange story. So the question we're going to try to figure out this evening is, what's happening over here? Here's what we know. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suddenly upset at Moshe Rabbeinu, and yet the Torah doesn't tell us why. We know that God is so upset at Moshe Rabbeinu that he's ready to do what? He's ready to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that Tzipora circumcises their son, right? We're assuming now that this is their son Eliezer, because Gershom was already born earlier in the second of their two sons. We're not clear why, ultimately, again, why is she circumcising him now? What does the circumcision have to do with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is about to be killed by the Ribono Shel Olam? So the question is, A, what's happening here? What's the meaning of this story? What are we to take from it? And B, and to this, and B, and what's the message? Because remember, whenever the Torah includes stories, stories are never here just for the story, just for the informational purpose. They're always there to convey either some legal, moral, or ethical aspect. So number one, what exactly is happening? Number two, what is the message? So, God willing, I'm going to try to do six different approaches this evening, time permitting. So let's start with the Medrash. The Medrash says something very interesting. Vahiba derech pamalon, im derech lama malon. So what the Medrash picks up on is, it's a strange phraseology. Vahi baderech bamalon. He was on the way at the inn. So why doesn't that make sense? Because if you're on the road, then you're not in the inn. And if you're on the inn, then you're not on the road. So what's the pshat? So it says the Medrash something amazing. Ela melamed shehaya Moshe nichnas v'yotze mimalo l'derech. Rather, what was happening over here? Moshe Rabbeinu was going back and forth from his inn, from his hotel, from the inn to the road. Umiderech l'malon, and from the road to the inn. Why? V'hayu maharher b'da'ato. Because he was having second thoughts about this assignment, about this mission. V'omer, im yelech l'mitzrayim l'gol es Yisrael im lav, l'fi shehaya maharher b'da'ato im omer higiyaz man ha'gula. So the Medrash is something amazing. Moshe Rabbeinu was having second thoughts about his mission. He's not sure what to do. And therefore, v'hi baderech b'malon. What is he doing? So he's on the derech, the road. Now, interestingly enough, the road represents the way down to Egypt. Malon represents staying still. So one moment he's ready to go to Egypt. Next moment he goes back to the inn. Now he's ready to go back to Egypt. That's Moshe and his maharher. He's having second thoughts about this. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure if the people are really ready to be redeemed. Remember, not our topic for tonight, but remember, Moshe Rabbeinu's last experience with his Jewish brethren was not a positive one. Remember, his last encounter was with the two men who Rashi identifies as Dasan Va'aviram, who are ready to turn Moshe Rabbeinu into the Egyptian authorities for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu killed an Egyptian taskmaster who was striking a Jew. So Moshe Rabbeinu wonders to himself this whole time, are they really ready for redemption? Are they really redeemable? Are they really salvageable? So the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu told God he was going to go, but now he's not sure. And therefore the Medrash explains, that's why, Vayifkesheyu Hashem, Vayivakesh HaMiso. Really, Moshe? I'm sorry, when I tell you to do something, do it. And when I tell you to do something, it's not your place to have second thoughts. Be a good soldier and follow the orders that I give you. So that's the Medrash. The problem, of course, not the problem, but the difficulty with the Medrash is what? Is the whole second part of the story. Because the whole second part of the story involves Tzipporah giving a bris to her son. So if indeed all this is about is Moshe Rabbeinu having second thoughts about his mission, what do we do with the whole bris narrative in the second part of the story? Which then leads us to our second approach. The Rashbam and the Chizkuni, number three. The Rashbam writes, "Vayifkesheyu Hashem." Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu ready to kill Moshe Rabbeinu? Ki haya mis'atzel b'halichoso umolich ishta uvana. Literally translated, mis'atzel means what? It literally means lazy, but what it means is he was too slow. You know, this, what everyone knows, that if you're going somewhere with your family, right, what's the first thing you have to do? Right? Give yourself another 5 hours to get wherever you have to get. So says the Rashbam, Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you packing up the biblical minivan? Right? Why are you taking a family? So you're taking your wife, you're taking two kids, one of whom is an infant. It's going to slow you down. There's no time to waste here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to spring into action. When God says jump, when God says run, when God says go, you go. And anyone else is going to go ahead and slow you down. You have to leave behind. Now again, Moshe Rabbeinu has a wonderful place to deposit his family, namely with his in-laws. So leave Tzipora, leave the kids at home, and go do what you have to do. Number four, the Chizkuni says the same thing. Vayivakesh HaMiso, the Moshe, Shahari Hayolo Laleches Levado B'chipazon B'shlichuso Shalmakom. Moshe Rabbeinu should have gone alone, because that would allow him to go quickly. Moshe Rabbeinu ends up what? Traveling very slowly. Very slowly. And the Ribono Shel Olam, according to the Rashbam and the Chizkuni, is incensed about this. When God gives you a mission, you don't tarry, you don't delay. And therefore, Vayivakesh HaMiso. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to kill him. What's the problem with this approach? Truth is, it's the same problem with the Medrash, which is what? What about the Bris Mila narrative? So again, I understand why God is upset with Moshe, but remember how the story clearly plays out. Here's how the story presents. God is angry at Moshe. God is ready to kill Moshe. And what ultimately calms down the divine wrath? What comes down the divine wrath? The Bris Mila that Tzipora performs on her son. So the problem we're left with again, the Medrash and the Rashbam and the Chizkuni is both very interesting. Remember, according to the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu is having second thoughts. God gets angry at him, ready to kill him for having second thoughts. Rashbam, Chizkuni, Moshe Rabbeinu is tarrying. It's just taking too long. And God is upset about this. But again, problem with both of these two approaches is what does it have to do with Bris Mila? Which then leads us to our third approach. So the Gemara Maseches Nedarim says something amazing. The Gemara says, Tana, Tanya, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha says the following. Gedola Mila. See how important the mitzvah of circumcision, the mitzvah of Bris Mila is. Shekol zechuyos she'asa Moshe Rabbeinu lo amda lo kishenis rasha min amila. Because as many merits as Moshe Rabbeinu had, when Moshe Rabbeinu says the Medrash was derelict in his responsibility to circumcise his son, all of his previously amassed and accrued merits were unable to save him. Shene Emar, Vayifkesheyu Hashem, Vayivakesh Hanisom. Because what does the pasuk say? God met Moshe Rabbeinu and he wanted to kill him. So what's interesting right from the beginning is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha understands that why is God upset at Moshe Rabbeinu? Because Moshe Rabbeinu delayed circumcising his youngest son. He has a baby. This baby will later on be known as Eliezer. Eliezer apparently was ready to be circumcised already back in Midian, apparently. And Moshe Rabbeinu delays the circumcision. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so upset that Moshe has delayed the circumcision that God is literally ready to kill Moshe. The Gemara goes on. Amar Rebbe, Chas v'sholom sh'Moshe Rabbeinu nisrash al min amila. God forbid. Moshe wouldn't be. Now, understand something very interesting. Bris Mila was one of the mitzvos that were already accepted in the Abrahamic family, even though what? All of this is occurring before Har Sinai. All of this is occurring before Sinaitic revelation. All of this is occurring before we receive the Torah. But remember again, Bris Mila circumcision was already accepted upon the Abrahamic family from the time that Avraham Avinu circumcised himself and circumcised the members of his household. So Rebbe says, God forbid, Moshe Rabbeinu would have never been derelict in his duty to circumcise his son. So why didn't he? So why did he wait? Elakach Amar, listen to this. So this was his cheshbon. He said the following. Emo ve'etze sakonehi. So apparently, the little baby was already 8 days old in Midian. But what's the problem? If I circumcise him in Midian, what's going to happen? It's going to be a sakona. Why? Because you can't travel immediately with a child who's just had a circumcision. So it's interesting, Rebbe quotes from the episode of Shechem, that when do she, remember, after Shechem abducts and abuses Dinah, so what happens? Shimon and Levi go in there, wipe out the whole city. When do they wipe out the whole city? On the third day after the men of Shechem had agreed to circumcise. So you see from here that at the third day after Mila, a person is in a precarious health situation. Precarious personal health situation. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says like this, if I go ahead, listen to this, if I go ahead and I circumcise my son now, that will prevent me from going in and traveling. Emol, ve'esha shloshe yamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu amar li leich shuv Mitzrayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says like this, if I circumcise the baby now, what's going to happen? I'm going to have to wait here in Midian for another 3 days. And what did God tell me to do? What did God tell me to go? So it's interesting. So here you have the Gemara addressing the previous points. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, I know, I must spring into action. So I can't do the Bris Mila now because that will keep me rooted in Midian for another 3 days. So what happens? Ela mipnei mat. So again, so this is a good cheshbon. This makes a lot of sense. Therefore, what happens over here? So Moshe Rabbeinu delayed the Bris Mila. Why? Not because, God forbid, he was derelict in his responsibility, because he realized he had to travel. So because he had to travel, sounds like a good cheshbon. So why was he punished? So the Gemara says, Ela mipnei ma ne'enash Moshe. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu punished? Mipnei shenis asik b'malon t'chila. Shene emar v'hi baderech b'malon. So what is Moshe Rabbeinu held accountable for? That what? That he took care of his lodging before he gave his son a Bris Mila. Meaning what the Gemara says is like this. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu delayed the Bris, that is totally understandable, makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, because if he would have done the Bris in Midian, what would have happened? He would have been stuck in Midian for another 3 days. And God told him, you have to go, you have to move. Fine. So why was Moshe being punished? Because the pasuk says, Vahiba derach b'malon. Because when he reached a certain spot, a resting place, where he was able to spend a little bit of time, what should he have done first? He should have circumcised his son right then and there. But instead, Moshe Rabbeinu first took care of his lodging. He first took care of his accommodations. And then only afterwards did he go ahead and circumcise his son. So says Rebbe, that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam was upset for. You should have done the bris milah first and lodging accommodation afterwards. Which then leads us to an obvious question, which is, it doesn't sound so outrageous to take care of your accommodations first and then do the bris milah afterwards. After all, again, you have a family. You're going to have the kid is going to have a circumcision. You need to have some place to put the family down to be able to settle everyone. So look at number six. The Shita Mikubetzes comments on this, and I put a little biography over here as well. Rabbi Tzelav and Avram Ashkenazi. So the Shita Mikubetzes comments on this, and he says, Ukvar haya karov l'mitzrayim v'yachol haya lomu v'ein kan sakana l'tinok shekol ikar ha-sakana miyam ha-shlishi. So this is very interesting. He says that where they were already geographically was close enough to Egypt that he could have gone ahead and circumcised the child and what? And made it to Egypt relatively quickly. So there was no need to even take care of accommodations at all. Moshe Rabbeinu could have done the bris milah and just simply continue on to Egypt immediately afterwards. Okay, look at number 70, Ibn Ezra. He says, V'zed davar asa Moshe. Look at the last line. So the Ibn Ezra goes back to what he stated earlier, which is what? You know why God is upset at Moshe Rabbeinu? Because he should have never brought the family to begin with. He shouldn't have brought them. So again, did Moshe Rabbeinu need to take care of lodgings first? Did he need to do that? Yes, but why did he need to do that? Because he brought the family. And what should he have not done? Brought the family. So yes, Moshe, they say that you now have to take care of lodgings, but taking care of lodgings is only a function of the fact that you made the wrong decision of bringing the family with you. Therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam holds him accountable. One more approach. Number eight, the Netziv. So the Netziv writes, he says like this. He says something very interesting. He says, Vahiba derach b'malo, shemis asek, shemis asek b'malo, Bisar mi ma'aloso kirega sheneschayev lo shol na'alo me'al raglov kimo shebe'arno la'el sheya tamid mufshat miteva b'nei adam. So this is amazing. Rak tamid dovuk u'mufrash lios merkava l'shchina. Then it makes an amazing observation. If you remember again, the first time Moshe Rabbeinu meets HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the burning bush, God gives him a very simple instruction. And what is it? Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Take your shoes off. Take your shoes off, right? Why? Because the makom, the place that you're standing on, admas kodesh, is holy ground. Holy ground. You have to take off your shoes. Now, it's interesting to note, why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to take off his shoes? Because it's admas kodesh. So what's interesting is the following. The Mefarshim explained, shoes represent stability, right? When you have shoes on, so the truth is you can walk, and whatever the terrain is, you know that you're going to be okay. And you don't have to constantly be looking around because you know that your shoes will be there to protect you. Shoes give you stability. Shoes give you confidence. Shoes make a person feel self-assured. So, Chiddush Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to have to understand one thing. I need you to take off your shoes. What does it mean for Moshe Rabbeinu to take off his shoes? I need you to know that at the end of the day, I am the one who's holding you up. Meaning this whole partnership of you being my mouthpiece, of you being my agent, is only going to work if you put your full confidence in me. Take off your shoes. And says the Netziv, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu to take off his shoes, we know what's interesting? Says the Netziv, God never tells Moshe Rabbeinu to put them back on. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is to live his life barefoot. Moshe Rabbeinu is to live his life without shoes. Moshe Rabbeinu does not live a life of self-confidence. Moshe Rabbeinu lives a life of pure and total reliance. And that's necessary for Moshe. It's not a model necessarily for us, but it's a model for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu has to live a life of pure, unadulterated dependency of God. Of a life, the truth is, that is more supernatural than natural in its nature. So therefore, it says in the Tzitzis something amazing. You know what? For a regular person, if they were traveling and they had to circumcise a child, yes, what would they do first? Lodgings. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're not a regular person. Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't live life in a regular way. Moshe Rabbeinu, your circumstances are literally detached from the normal mechanistic aspects of day-to-day life. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, although it would have made sense for a regular person to first take care of their lodgings and then afterwards do the milah, for you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you should have done the milah first. And then afterwards, you'll take care of your lodgings. Because by doing that order, by engaging in that sequence, what you show is that you are living life without your shoes. You show that you realize that you are totally dependent on me, that I am your right hand, that I am holding you up, that I am supporting you every single step of it. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you, I need you to actively lean on me every step of the way. Says the Netziv, Moshe Rabbeinu acted as a normal person would. The difference is that Moshe Rabbeinu was not a normal person. That was not his tachlis in life. His tachlis was to continue always without shoes, and therefore, again, he should have first given the bris milah to Eliezer, demonstrating a total dependency on the Ribono Shel Olam, and then afterwards, he should have taken care of the accommodations. So again, in this third approach, what's coming out over here is what's unfolding over here is simply this is about bris milah. Moshe Rabbeinu delayed in giving the bris milah to Eliezer. Was that the right decision?
No. We don't know.
Yes. Yes. Why? Because what did the Gemara say? Because remember, had he done the bris milah minyan, what would have happened? It would have delayed it. The Gemara is saying over here, the Gemara is saying, according to Rebbe, that no, Moshe Rabbeinu made the right decision by delaying the milah, right? But what was his mistake? His mistake was when the opportunity came to do the milah, he put taking care of the accommodations before the bris milah. What's so wrong with that? That seems like a very normal thing. You're right, it's normal for me and you. But that's not Moshe Rabbeinu's normal. Moshe Rabbeinu's normal is to live in the world of the supernatural. Moshe Rabbeinu's normal is to do what the Ribono Shel Olam asks of him without even thinking about the consequences. Therefore, for Moshe Rabbeinu, what he should have done, first do the milah, and then only afterwards the accommodations. Okay, which now leads us to our fourth approach. Rav Hirsch goes in a totally different direction. Rav Hirsch writes, he says, Vayif Kasheyu Hashem, the same God who had just sent him out with such a great message and on whose mission he was just occupied suddenly came against him and preferred to let him die. From what follows is evident that Moshe neglected to circumcise his son and that this was the cause of his life becoming suddenly endangered. Was he not embarked on a mission to accomplish the salvation of a people whose whole meaning and importance in the world rests in the idea of Mila? And should he, just he, bring in the midst of his people an uncircumcised child? Rather, let him die than let him introduce his mission with such an example. This is how it seems Vayivakish must be understood, a word which is doubly difficult if applied to God. See, he goes on. So now what's interesting is the following. What's interesting, says Rav Hirsch, is that, you understand the anomaly over here. Rav Hirsch says, Bris Milah represents ultimately the ultimate covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It represents man's ability to totally subjugate his physicality to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is a tangible sign of the covenant between man and God. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu being sent to Egypt? Moshe Rabbeinu is being sent to reignite or to reforge that covenant between the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says Rav Hirsch, for Moshe Rabbeinu to bring down an uncircumcised child into Mitzrayim undermines everything he's trying to do. His whole job is to reignite that bond between God and his people, represented by Milah. And Moshe Rabbeinu is derelict in his responsibility to do Milah, unacceptable. But Rav Hirsch goes on. He says this in a more profound way. But taken this way, he prefers this word, tells us the important fact that God's plans are dependent on no man. Harbe shluchim l'mokom. No man, not even Moses, is indispensable to God. It disposes of the erroneous idea into which we might have been led by the previous verses, by the insistence with which God pressed Moshe to understand the mission. We also see here how God, so listen to this. So number two, Rav Hirsch says, is something very interesting, that when you would read the previous psukim, what it sounds like is Moshe Rabbeinu is the only person who could redeem Klal Yisrael, right? Why else would God twist his arm in such a dramatic fashion? It must be that only Moshe could do it. So Rav Hirsch comes along and says that the Torah puts down this episode, why, to show God needs no one. God needs no one, not even a Moshe. God pressures Moshe Rabbeinu to accept this responsibility because he realized that this was Moshe's destiny. This is how Moshe would actualize his greatness. Does the Ribono Shel Olam need Moshe Rabbeinu? Absolutely not. What's the proof to that? The proof to that is, and Rafersh goes on, that if Moshe Rabbeinu is faulted, if Moshe Rabbeinu finds fault in God, Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately transgresses. If Moshe Rabbeinu does not toe the line, if Moshe Rabbeinu does not live up to the divine expectations, what happens to Moshe? What happens to Moshe? He's out. He's out. So says Rav Hirsch, the Torah is teaching us such a profound idea. You might have read the earlier episode and say, wow, I see that God really needs certain people. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed Moshe Rabbeinu, that the divine task could not have been accomplished without Moshe Rabbeinu. Comes on this episode to say, no. Moshe, first of all, number one, why is Moshe Rabbeinu great? Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness is relative to his adherence of the word of God. The moment that Moshe Rabbeinu stops paying attention to the details of his relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam is the moment that what? That he becomes unnecessary. And the moment that he becomes unnecessary highlights the idea that the Ribono Shel Olam needs no one. The Ribono Shel Olam needs no man. Remember, we mentioned this a number of times. God doesn't need us. What God does is God offers us, offers each of us the unique privilege to partner with him to bring about certain results. But that's a privilege that he gives us. If I choose not to partner with God, if I choose not to do my part, it's okay. My part will get done. The Ribono Shel Olam will ensure that it gets done some other. I lose out because I lose the opportunity to partner. But the task will always be accomplished. So again, lest you think that it's only Moshe who could redeem the people. No, God is giving Moshe the beautiful opportunity. But Moshe, should you shirk your responsibilities? Should you become derelict in your responsibilities? Should you become filled with fault? Should you become filled with sin? Just know, you're done. And I'll move on to plan B to bring about redemption. So according to this approach, again, what's interesting is, in the first few approaches, really so far in the Medrash, the Rashbam, Cheskuni, the Gemara, so the idea of not necessarily, it's hard, we can understand the story, but it's hard to understand what the take-home message would be. Here, according to Rav Hirsch, the Torah is teaching us a very profound message, which is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the opportunity and unique privilege to partner, but in no way is God's plan dependent on me, on you, or any of us. The divine plan will actualize just the way it's supposed to. It's just that the Ribono Shel Olam gives us the opportunity to partner, but we have to live up to that responsibility, to that ability to be a partner with the divine. Now brings us to the fifth approach, which I labeled as six. Sorry about that. So if you look at number 10, so I'm quoting to you here from the Sefer Toldos Yitzchak, and you could see, actually, you could turn the page because we're going to be looking at paragraph Dalet. So Toldos Yitzchak is Rav Yitzchak ben Yosef Karo. He's actually a nephew of the Machaber of Rabbi Yosef Karo. So he has a whole, if you'll notice, some of the print is smaller because we're not going to do all of this, but at the same time, I wanted to put all this on your sheet so you could see it. The Toldos Yitzchak goes through all the different answers that we gave and tries to understand, at the end of the day, feels that they're not so. See, he gives additional insight. So you can look into it on your own. But I want to draw your attention to paragraph Dalet. V'yesh, bless you, V'yesh mekan od sofek gadol. Says the Toldos Yitzchak, I have another big question with this, which is Moshe, lama lo mal beno, sha'av chayiv lamol beno, velo ha'im ad shelazeh amru zam seches avodah zarah, kari bebatikach beikar. So listen to this. So he says something very interesting. He says, why is it the way these events unfolded is Moshe Rabbeinu is somehow in some dangerous situation? And again, let's go with the approach now that it's because of the Mila. So now the question is, why is it Moshe Rabbeinu given the opportunity to perform the bris? Why is it that Tzipora gives the bris? Now he quotes over here from the Gemara that explains that in fact, Tzipora began the bris and then gave the stone to Moshe Rabbeinu to finish off the bris. So he asks, "V'al kolze yesh safek, lama lo asa Moshe mirtzono, ashet Tzipora biksha mimeno shiyimo, v'gam lama lo haya Moshe maschil v'hagomer." So listen to this. So Toldos Yitzchak asks a very simple question. He says, "What if this is all about Mila? If this is what this is all about, then why is the way that the story works out that Tzipora is the one who begins the Mila and afterwards gives the stone to Moshe and to complete the Mila? Why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu doing the milah himself from beginning to end? After all, again, the mitzvah milah is a mitzvah on the father. So why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu able to do the milah from beginning to end himself? So he says, Hatshuva, Shezeh ben Hasheni Eliezer. First of all, he says, let's understand what we're talking about over here. We're talking about the second son, Eliezer. Now look at paragraph A. Obezos ha'akdama. With this introduction, let me tell you the following. Ne'emar, Shetzipor leben Arishon, Shu Gershom, Afa pi shehi goya, Hirshasa lemoshe shiyamol beno. So remember, Tzipora is not Jewish. Tzipora is not Jewish. Now, truth is, that's not a big shock. Why?
Nobody's
Jewish either, right? Meaning, again, remember, the idea of Judaism, of Bnei Yisrael exists, but the concept of Judaism, as we know it, only begins at Matan Torah. Right now, what you have is you have monotheists, you have individuals who are the descendants of Avram Avinu. Tzipora obviously is not a descendant of Avram Avinu. She comes from a Midianite family. She comes from a family, a very prominent of the Avodah Zarah. Now, what the Tolus Yitzchak points out over here is the following, and it's quite possible that she did not necessarily subscribe to Moshe Rabbeinu's whole ideology. It's quite possible. But I think this is just an incredible idea also in terms of marriage. Now, obviously, biblical paradigm of marriage is very different than the contemporary paradigm of marriage. But what clearly comes out is people often think that a spouse has to be like a mirror image of me. You have to believe like me. You have to say the same hashkafas as me. You have the same. It's not true. It's not true. You don't have to be a carbon copy of your spouse. In fact, there are many beautiful, wonderful marriages where people are very dissimilar. Again, obviously, you have to have some kind of common ground. But the idea is that people do not, there is this erroneous mindset that the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with has to be like me in every way. And if they're dissimilar than me, it's not going to work. Pashut, not true. The Toldos Yitzchak, says that it's quite possible and maybe even probable that Tzipora did not believe in all of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu believed in. Remember, for Moshe Rabbeinu, and I understand you'll say, oh, who read such a shidduch for Moshe Rabbeinu? Right? It's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's got his mother, didn't use plastic tablecloths or anything like that. You know, so again, how could he wind up with a shidduch like this? Understand, remember, who was everybody marrying in those times? Who did the tribes marry? Who did the Shvatim? Who did the sons of Yaakov marry? Who did they marry? They married Canaanite women. Did these women believe like their husband, not believe like their husbands? Who knows? But they were committed to raising the children in a particular way. So says the Toldos Yitzchak, Tzipora, they have not really gone along with Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, she went along with Moshe, of course, whatever he was going to say, but she might not have believed like he believed. So what? Listen to this. But yet, when their first son was born, she agreed that the child should be circumcised. Why? Because he says, Ki Amra Me'achash. I mean, now number 10, paragraph A, second line. Ki Amra Me'achash Aviv Mahu Yegama Ben Mahu. Because she said, listen, if my husband, the child's father, is circumcised, it's only appropriate that the child be circumcised as well. Aval Kishe Ra'asa Shebino B'Sakana Mitzad Amila O B'Bechia Rabba Kederach Hanimulim. So listen to this. So she agreed to the circumcision. It's quite possible that what? That she might not have been aware in exactly what bris milah entails. So what happens? She's at the bris for her first son, and what happens? She sees the blood, and she hears the crying, and she sees the recovery over the next couple of days, and she decides, you know what? L'chein kishiyalda l'eliezer, shehu zeh shehizkeh v'kan, lo azva l'moshe sheyamol oso. Says to Toldos Yitzchak something amazing. When son number two is born, Tzipora says to Moshe, No way. Right? You circumcised the first kid. I was a young bride. I wanted to please my husband. Right? No, not gonna do this again. I did it for the first son, not gonna do it for the second one. Ki amra penyamus ulafisha hayaroi lemoshe shiyamo osu al karcha. So listen to this. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, what am I gonna do? If you tell me that I can't go ahead and circumcise my son, I'm not going to circumcise my son. So says the Toldos Yitzchak, what should he have done? He should have circumcised the child even without Tzipora's permission. He should have gone ahead, and therefore what happens? Well, as Moshe Rabbeinu is on the road, God himself meets Moshe Rabbeinu, and God is ready to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because Moshe, okay, if your wife doesn't want it, you should have circumcised the child anyway. V'lochein, listen to this.
So
Umala also kolkach b'mehiru. So says the Tovos Yitzchak, something amazing. So you know what happens over here? You know why Tzipora gives the bris milah? Because Tzipora had to give the bris milah. Because it was Tzipora who at first, again, was the one who said, we're not doing this. And therefore, again, she had to rectify her previous stance by she herself engaging in the maisami, the act of circumcision, herself, on her own. If you skip down a little bit. So actually, skip down to paragraph above. So now the Talmud says, you know, everybody tries to understand, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu circumcise his son in Midian? So remember, we saw, what did the Gemara say? Why didn't he circumcise his son in Midian? Right? Because he was afraid it would delay travel. So the Talmud says, much simpler. You know why he didn't circumcise his son in Midian? You know why? Because his wife said no. Tzipora said no. And therefore, again, Shahat Lefi Shaya on paragraph above, Lefi Shaya Anos Mitzad Ishto. They were circumcised. His wife put his foot down. Oh, Nira Shatam Shlomo. Okay. So therefore, again, what the Tolbas Yitzchak suggests is something radically different. The Tolbas Yitzchak says over here that what's happening? Son number two, Tzipora went along with circumcision for son number one. Son number two, she's putting her foot down. Moshe Rabbeinu says, should circumcise the son anyway. But Moshe Rabbeinu, again, is not going to violate the wishes of his wife. Therefore, again, he does not circumcise the child. The Ribono Shel Olam is angry at Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is God angry at Moshe Rabbeinu? For all the reasons that we said before, like we saw in Rav Hirsch earlier. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, you're in direct conflict with your mission. Your mission is to go ahead and forge the bond between me, God, and the Jewish people. Bris Milah is the physical representation of that bond. For you to have an uncircumcised child goes against the very grain of your agency. God is ready to kill him. Why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu given the opportunity to do the bris milah himself? Because this was Tzipora's moment. Because this was Tzipora's opportunity to do what? This was Tzipora's opportunity to join her husband on his theological religious journey. Take a look at number 11. Rav Hirsch says this beautifully. Rav Hirsch says, but it is not even necessary to go as far as this. We need only to think, listen to this, that Tzipora, who after all was not a daughter of Israel, and at the beginning had possibly not yet absorbed all the ideas of Moshe. Remember, again, we don't think this way. We think, of course, Tzipora got on board. She was a righteous woman. She was Moshe Rabbeinu's wife. I'm sure she was a righteous woman. But says Rav Hirsch, it's quite possible that she did not agree with all of Moshe Rabbeinu's ideology. Did she believe Moshe Rabbeinu when he came home from work one day and said, honey, you're not going to believe it. God, I spoke to God on the mountain, right? He kept me there for days, and I'm the redeemer. I'm the chosen one. I'm going to go get the Jewish people out of Egypt. What do you think she's thinking to herself? I don't know. Sunstroke. I don't know what she's thinking to herself, right? But Reverse says it's quite possible that she did not buy into all of this stuff, but it's okay. She was a wonderfully supportive wife, and whatever her husband was going to do, she was going to go along. So what happens? She found it hard to allow her child to be circumcised. In the force of circumstances, Moshe gave into a postponement. So Rav Hirsch is just echoing what the Tolus Yitzchak said before. Tzipora put her foot down. That's why Eliezer is not circumcised. Listen to this. But not thus was Moshe to come to Egypt, and not thus Tzipora. Not in Midian, but on the journey. Free from all influence of parents and relatives, alone, thrown back entirely on herself, Tzipora is to soar to the heights of Jewish womanhood. Like an offering, she lays the orla, the foreskin of her child, at the feet of her husband, struggling in the throes of death. Rav Hirsch says something absolutely amazing. You know why this whole episode is here? You know what comes out from this entire episode? This is Tzipora's opportunity to assume her role in the redemption process. This was Tzipora's opportunity to literally become Moshe Rabbeinu's partner. It couldn't happen in Midian. Why couldn't it happen in Midian? Because in Midian, she is surrounded by all the circumstances of the life in which she grew up in. She was the daughter of a high priest, an idolatrous high priest. The friends that she had were probably, again, these idolaters. Her siblings were idolaters. In Midian, she was unable to change. In Midian, she was unable to give up the ideology of her youth and adopt the ideology of her husband. But now, Baderech, on the road where you're free of influences, Tzipora has an opportunity to make of herself something else. And again, Rav Hirsch's his wording is so beautiful, that she has the opportunity to soar to the heights of Jewish womanhood. Says Rav Hirsch, that's what's unfolding over here. This entire episode is not about Moshe Rabbeinu. God is angry at Moshe because he gave in to postponement. He should have circumcised the child even against his wife's wishes. But at the end of the day, what comes out of this episode is an opportunity for Tzipora to forge a new identity. Not an identity as Yisro's daughter, but a new identity as the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu. A new identity as a partner to a man. And remember again, Tzipora did not have an easy life. Tzipora did not have, I would say she didn't have an easy marriage, but the truth is she didn't have much of a marriage at all. She had to give up her husband. They're just like her children had to give up their father to Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu did not have, this goes back to what we said before, Moshe Rabbeinu was the man with no shoes. As the man of no shoes, you lose all of the trappings of normal, regular life, family, wife, children, normalcy, privacy. Moshe Rabbeinu has none of it. And in order for Tzipora to be able to make that sacrifice later on, she first had to buy in to Moshe Rabbeinu's divine mission. When does she buy into the divine mission? In the moment that she engages in the process that she herself obstructed and prevented earlier. When she gives her child the bris milah, the very process that she said to Moshe Rabbeinu before, no way, it's ridiculous, it's barbaric, it's terrible, don't do it. The moment that she does that is the moment that she pledges allegiance to the God of her husband and she becomes a full partner in all of Moshe Rabbeinu's endeavors. So now we have, based on our first six approaches. A quick review. So far we've done five approaches. So remember, again, we're trying to understand what this particular story is over here. What is it doing here? So first we saw the Medrash. And according to the Medrash, remember, Moshe Rabbeinu is in trouble. Why? Bamalon, Baderach. Or Baderach, Bamalon. Moshe is having second thoughts about the agency. Should I go? Shouldn't I go? God gets upset, ready to kill him. Problem with that approach is it doesn't tie into the rest of the Mila, to the circumcision narrative. Second approach, God has said to Moshe Rabbeinu, why? He's taking too long to get to Egypt. Who told you to bring the family? God is ready to kill him because he delays, he tarries. Okay, same question. What does that do with the Mila narrative? Third approach, which was the Gemara, it's all about the Mila. All about the Mila. God is not upset that Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and delayed the Mila because that made sense. Couldn't give the Mila in Midian. So what is God upset at Moshe Rabbeinu about? That he first took care by hi baderach bamalon, because you first took care of your lodgings and then afterwards you were going to do the milah. You should have done the milah first. What is Moshe Rabbeinu supposed to do with his family? Nitziv, Moshe Rabbeinu, remember when God told you to take off your shoes, he was giving you an explicit command to never put back on. You don't live with the considerations that others have. You don't live with the realities that others have. You have one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to serve the Rebbe and to be the mouth, to be the mouthpiece of God. And as such, everything you do, whenever you do whatever you do, God comes first. So whereas other people would have been totally legitimate for them to take care of accommodations first and bris milah second, you, Moshe, you are the barefoot prophet. You are the man without shoes. You are the man who lives side by side with me, God. As such, you should have first done bris milah and then only afterwards do you go ahead and take care of accommodations. And finally, again, for now, our fourth approach, which was, again, the Todos Yitzchak, Rav Hirsch, where this is not about Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a little bit about Moshe Rabbeinu, because God is upset at Moshe Rabbeinu that he postponed the bris milah. He should have done it, despite Tzipora's protestations. But yet, what's unfolding over here? This is a setup. You know, every once in a while, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sets us up. He sets us up in certain circumstances so that we can overcome them and grow. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set Tzipora up. Tzipora, you got to make a decision. What's it going to be? Are you going to continue to be the daughter of Yisro and continue just to identify with that way of life? Or are you ready to join your husband on his mission? And the way you're going to show your commitment is you're going to do the one thing that you strenuously objected against towards your husband. You're going to have to be mild. You're going to have to circumcise this child. That will show your commitment to me, God. That will show your commitment to your husband's mission. And amazingly enough, Tzipora passes. We now come to our last approach for tonight. Take a look at number 12. So there's an interesting tshuva in the Trumas HaDeshen. So you can see the Trumas HaDeshen is Rabbi Yisroel ben Psachya Isserlin, born in Regensburg, Germany, 1390 to 1460. So the Trumas HaDeshen deals with a very interesting question, nothing to do with our parasha, but it will have to do with it in just a moment. He says, Sheila, I'm in 12 Aleph, Sheila, Haroe Levana Bechidusha B'meichol. Listen to this. If you see the new moon during the weekdays, Omer, Namtin Levarich al Chidusha ad Lamotze Shabbos, Yafahim Osim Olaf. So he asked the question about Kiddush Levana. So we know that at the beginning of every single month, we go outside and we do Kiddush Levana, a special bracha over the renewal of the moon. Okay, so we normally do this on Matzei Shabbos. Why? Because the halacha explains that on Matzei Shabbos, a person is mevusam, a person is fragrant. The spirituality of Shabbos endows one with a beautiful spiritual fragrance. And as we come to meet the new month, the new moon, we want to be fragrant. So we normally try to do Kiddush Levana on a Matzei Shabbos. So let's say now it's a Tuesday night, and there is a perfectly good new moon outside. Should I go ahead and do Kiddush Levana now? Or should I wait till Matzei Shabbos to do Kiddush Levana? Okay, look what the Tshuva Sedeshin writes. He says, Tshuva, it would appear, Tshuva, Giroe. So the translation says, the truth is there are two possible answers. So the translation says like this. It depends. If there's going to be time, because remember, the problem with Kiddush Levana is what? Or the challenge is, you have to be able to see the moon. And if it's cloudy, you can't do Kiddush Levana. So says the Tshuva Sedeshin, if there's going to be time after Matzei Shabbos, because remember, you can say Kiddush Levana until the 15th of the month, the middle of the month. So if there's going to be a couple of days after Matzei Shabbos, so if Matzei Shabbos is cloudy, you still have some days afterwards, then what? Then you can wait till Matzei Shabbos to say Kiddush Levana, because that way, worst case scenario is what? You'll have time afterwards. The kasev arzarua de imavarchin. Fine, skip down a little bit. Bless you. Aval emleil matzei Shabbos haba yihye leilos harbi bechodesh shim yihye mo'unan bo ubeiz ogimo odal leilos acharav yavor zman abracha ki agav ne'in lahamtinan matzei Shabbos. But says the Tshuva Sedeshin. But if let's say matzei Shabbos is already close to the cutoff point, where if it's cloudy on Matzei Shabbos, you may run the risk on missing. So Kiddush Levana in totality, then what? Then you should do it right now. Why? He says, "D'chol heichab d'roi hu lehistapek shetavar ha-mitzvah." Because whenever there's the possibility that you're going to lose out on the opportunity of a mitzvah, ein mashenosa, we don't delay. Afilu kedei la'asosa yosra min ha-mufkar. So here's what the Tshuva Sedeshin is struggling with over here. Here's my struggle. On one hand, I could do it. I want to do it on Matzei Shabbos. Why? Because that's a more beautiful way of performing the mitzvah. You come off Shabbos, person's on a spiritual high, then a shami. So the extra added dimension of spirituality is still with a person, even on Matzei Shabbos. To some degree, a person is spiritually fragrant. So on one hand, again, the mitzvah is right here. It's Wednesday. It's right here. I have the opportunity now. But the opportunity now is not perfect. It's not pristine. It's not the most perfect way to do it. So I can wait till Matzei Shabbos, but where it's going to be perfect. But if I wait till Matzei Shabbos, then what? Then what? I run the risk that I can miss it. So the question is, should I do an imperfect mitzvah now, but it's imperfect? Or should I wait to do it perfectly, but run the risk of what? Missing it in its totality. So says the Tshuva Sedeshin, when you have a choice between doing the mitzvah imperfectly now versus potentially doing it perfectly later, but also running the risk of missing out on the mitzvah, we do it now imperfectly. Better to seize the imperfect opportunity than to wait for the perfect opportunity to come along and potentially miss it. Look at number 13. Rav Kook writes in his Sefer Orach HaMishpat, an amazing idea. He comments on this pasuk. He says, Chason Damim, Hayev Sherladun, get ready for this. Hayev Sherladun, Sheyofa mitzvah mehudaras gam kishema achrim kimoshin estapu aposki bazar. Rav Kook says, it's possible to say that maybe you should be able to delay the performance of a mitzvah in order that you could do the mitzvah in a more beautiful fashion. And remember, again, according to the Tshuva Sedeshin, you can do that under certain circumstances. When can you do by Kiddush Levana? As long as you're going to have a couple of days after Matzei Shabbos, so we would allow you to push Kiddush Levana to Matzei Shabbos. So we see that when possible, we try to perform the mitzvah in the most beautiful way possible, even if what? Even if that means what? Delaying the mitzvah a little bit. So says Rav Kook something amazing. Va'amarti bazeh inyan, listen to this. Inyan bazeh inyan, Moshe Rabbeinu Allah Shalom, shenes asik b'molo t'chila, hayitachin. So Rav Kook says we know that, quoting the Gemara, that Moshe Rabbeinu decided to take care of his hotel, decided to take care of his accommodations before Bris Milah. So says Rav Kook, is that possible? This is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the right hand of God. So is it the right hand man? Is it possible Moshe Rabbeinu would take care of his lodgings before taking care of the Bris Milah of his son? Listen to this. Omnam, hidur mitzvah la'asos su'uda be'is ha'milah. But says Rav Kook, and this is amazing. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's cheshvan? Moshe Rabbeinu's cheshvan was that, you know, when you do the Bris Milah, there's a beautiful hidur. How do we beautify the mitzvah? We don't just do Bris Milah, then everybody goes home. What do? We do a su'uda. We do a beautiful celebratory meal afterwards. And therefore, choshev tov la'acher v'la'asos behidur. So listen to this. It says Rav Kook, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu's cheshvan was? This is amazing. Rav Kook says Moshe knew that he was taking care of the accommodations before Bris Milah. But not because he didn't care about Bris Milah, just the opposite. What did he want to do? He wanted to do the Bris Milah in a more mohudur fashion. He wanted to do it in a more beautiful fashion. First of all, again, let's not do it, you know, at the Mali Pitcher rest stop on the side of the road, to Mitzrayim. That's number one. Number two, let's have a su'uda. Let's celebrate this mitzvah. If we're going to do it, then let's do it right. And in fact, Rav Kook makes an amazing observation. V'yesh lefarish bazeh ki chasan damim. Why does Tzipora say to Moshe that he's a chasan damim? Hainu sheyase su'uda b'simcha. What does Tzipora say? Oh, my husband. You know what happened? All you wanted to do is you wanted to go ahead and make this a little bit more. You wanted the baby to be like a chasen. Just like the chasen has a celebration to celebrate his wedding, you wanted our baby to also have a celebration over his bris milah. You wanted to do this mitzvah in the most mohuder fashion possible. But instead it turned out to be damim. It turned out to, God forbid, potentially cost you your life. V'achar kach shekvar niskaima mitzvah amar chason damim lamulos hainu ke'eis yucha gam lahachin sudas milah. This is amazing. Rav Kook says, Moshe Rabbeinu has a cheshbon. Moshe Rabbeinu knows that the Bris Milah is more important than his lodgings. He knows that the Bris Milah should take precedence. So why does he take care of the lodgings first? Because Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just want to do the mitzvah, but Moshe Rabbeinu wants to do the mitzvah in the most mohuder way possible. He wants to do it in the most beautiful way. Let's get to the mall. Let's get to the hotel, to the inn. Let's get settled. Let's get the baby settled. We'll do the Bris Milah about Kavod Nikvei. We'll invite people to have the su'uda. Let's make this something significant. But yet what? The Ribono Shel Olam was profoundly unhappy with Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ribono Shel Olam was ready, but how? But all Moshe Rabbeinu wants to do, he's not derelict, just the opposite. He just wants to beautify the mitzvah. Look at number 14. The Yalkut Shimoni writes, Ushmartem es hamatzos. The Torah tells us that for Pesach, you have to guard the matzos to make sure they don't become chametz. Writes the Medrash. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Al Tikri Kein Ela, Ushmartem es hamitzvos. You could vocalize that word matzos to mean mitzvos. What does it mean you should guard the mitzvos? Kederech she'ein machnitzin es hamatzo, kach lo yachnitzu es hamitzvos. The same way that when you're making the matzah, you are so diligent, you are so on top of it to make sure that the dough doesn't become chametz, because how does chametz occur? How does chametz occur? Chametz occurs not through any active or dynamic activity. Chametz occurs simply by passivity. Through passivity, you do nothing, right? You let it go and it becomes chametz. The same way that you have to make sure the dough doesn't become chametz, so to make sure that your mitzvos don't become chametz. How so? Elo, im ba mitzvah liyadecha, if a mitzvah opportunity comes your way, asay osa miyad. Do it immediately. And we have to add in one more caveat. Do it immediately, even if what? Even if it's imperfect. Even if it's imperfect. Just like the Chumash Hadeshan says, if there's a choice between doing Kiddush Levana now on Wednesday, which is a little bit imperfect, versus pushing it off to Matzei Shabbos, but on Matzei Shabbos, I run the risk of losing out. And remember, whenever you delay something, you always run the risk of losing out. Why? Why? At the risk of sounding morbid, because we have no idea what life holds in store for any of us. There are no guarantees. There's no insurance. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't promise us anything. So whenever you delay something, you always run the risk of losing us. This is the Chumash Hadeshan. There's a halachic construct. If I have a choice between an imperfect mitzvah now or a perfect mitzvah later on. But in order to get later, I have to delay the present opportunity. Says the Truman Station, what do? Don't delay. Seize the imperfect opportunity. Seize the imperfect opportunity now and don't delay by holding out for the hope of some perfect opportunity later on. Says Rav Kook, what was Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake? He wasn't derelict in Mila, God forbid. It's not that he didn't. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. So what was his mistake? His mistake is that he delayed the present opportunity for some future, more perfect opportunity. And says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not how we operate. The Jew understands that you seize your opportunities as they present themselves before you. You seize your opportunities as they come about, no matter how imperfect they may be. Those who spend life waiting for more perfect opportunities only end up doing one thing, and that is
waiting.
That's all they do. Because the truth is, you could always hold out for something more perfect. You could always hold out for something better. Those who spend life waiting for the better moments, those who spend life waiting for the more perfect moments, end up missing every moment. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu over here something very important. Moshe, if you're going to be the leader, then you must model the right behavior. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to be the agent, the messenger of Geula, of redemption. Redemption is not a flawless process. Redemption is not a perfect process. Redemption comes with many bumps, with many peaks, with many valleys. Redemption is difficult. Moshe Rabbeinu, if you're only going to wait around for the perfect moments, then we're never going to get out of Egypt. We're never going to get out of national Egypt. We're never going to get out of personal Egypt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that both personal and national redemption only comes when you seize the moments that life presents you, no matter how imperfect they may be. Because those who delay opportunity for dynamic life growth for some future perfect moment end up waiting a very long time. And of course, we see what was true for Moshe Rabbeinu is so true for us. So many of us miss so many beautiful opportunities, not because we don't have opportunities. Baruch Hashem, we get opportunities every single day. But very often the opportunities that come our way, it's okay. I can do better. I can do better. How am I going to do better? I'm just going to wait here. It's going to come to me. I know stuff. Obviously, we don't seize every single opportunity. That's for sure, because there are things we're supposed to do, things we're not supposed to do. But sometimes in life, we miss out on so much because we think there's something better down the pipe. There's something better down the road. There'll be some better opportunity later on. And we end up giving up so many beautiful present opportunities. Yes, very often they're imperfect. Very often they're flawed. Very often they're tarnished. But they're great opportunities nevertheless. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right. You know what? It's not going to be a real Kodak moment, Bris, when you're sitting there on the side of the road, right? And there's no bagels. There's no cream cheese. There's nothing. Your mom is just sitting there. It's just you and Tzipora and Gershom. There's no big celebration. There's no singing. There's no dancing. There's no opportunity for great collective Kiddush Hashem. I know. I got it. But this is what you have at your fingertips right now. Don't let it go. And it becomes just an awesome metaphor for life. We have so many opportunities. So many great things come across our life threshold each and every day. And we let them go right by simply because they're imperfect. We think they're imperfect or that we can do better. Sometimes in life, you do have to hold out for better. That is true. But more often than not, what Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us through his mistake, what the Ribbono Shel Olam teaches us through this reaction, is when beautiful life opportunities present themselves, take them, no matter how imperfect they may be. We'll stop over here. I'm sorry.
Nobody says what caused the poet to suddenly realize that.
So the truth is simple.